We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
There were almost 5,000 substantiated reports of child abuse and 60 deaths resulting from abuse in Pennsylvania during 2022. Child abuse in Pennsylvania is defined as when an individual acts or fails to prevent something that causes harm or a high likelihood of harm to a child under the age of 18. This harm can take many forms, such as bodily injury, serious mental injury, or sexual abuse or exploitation. April is Child Abuse Prevention Month. The Pennsylvania Family Support Alliance provides education, support, and training programs to make Pennsylvania safe for children. Angela Little is the president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Family Support Alliance and is with us on The Spark today. Angela, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Scott.
You know, I have to say that, and I think I've said this to you before, because almost every April we have you on the program to talk about child abuse. But whenever I hear those numbers, 4,992 substantiated reports of abuse and 60 deaths, you know, it's just heartbreaking. Why does it keep happening?
Well, I think if we knew that, we wouldn't have those numbers. That's for sure. We wouldn't. So, you know, I think that we are living in extraordinary times. And maybe we always said that, but we're seeing it more and more in our kids and in our families. So people are struggling with substance use disorder, food insecurity. They're struggling to make ends meet with still an economy that's not quite where we'd like it to be. There's inadequate childcare. So we have a lot of folks that aren't providing the supervision of their kids that are needed. And our kids are just needing a whole lot sometimes that they're not getting.
I always hate to ask about the numbers because we're talking about trusting, loving, laughing kids. We're not talking about just a number out there. But have you seen any trends?
Well, we know historically that children under age 6 are most at risk for death due to abuse and neglect. But you were at the Capitol last week with us, and you heard that there were some that were teenagers who were killed due to maltreatment. So I think one of the trends that we're seeing, not fatality related, but near fatality. So we've had our numbers increase around the near fatality cases. And what that basically means is that had there not been intervention, we have a medical physician that is certified the child would have died. So in all likelihood, it could have been a mandated reporter, it could have been a concerned community member who alerted the system that the child was in danger and then got the necessary intervention. But those numbers are increasing, and about 80% of all of the near fatalities are because of a lack of parental supervision. So we have kids who are ingesting cleaning material or over-the-counter meds or prescription meds, drowning in swimming pools, getting into unsecured firearms, those some very, very serious things. So it leads you to say, gosh, what is going on with our families?
So what you're describing is neglect.
Well, it's a lack of parental supervision. And that does fall under neglect. So, you know, it's just hard. We know that people are distracted. Right? How often are you out in public and you really see parents just giving undivided attention to kids? We have kids that are overscheduled like crazy. We have kids that spend an inordinate amount of time with their electronic devices. It is certainly a different day from kind of, you know, you and I are not that far apart in age. We kind of grew up with the Mr. Rogers neighborhood. It's not
you
like
have some
that.
News there, don't you?
We do. We spent some time yesterday out in La Trobe at the Fred Rogers Institute, and their associate director did a wonderful, wonderful presentation last week for a couple hundred people connected with PFSA about how to talk to kids during difficult times and times of trauma, school shootings, you know, natural disasters, kind of the uncertainty that we all somehow manage. And it was a fascinating, fascinating presentation. Looks like we'll be doing some more work with the Fred Rogers Institute, which is a great thing.
Just out of curiosity, I mean, you've been doing this a long time, but what did you learn?
Well, I don't know that I learned anything, but I was reminded of some things. So I'm an only child. So I grew up with the air of father knows best, leave it to Beaver, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Sesame Street. They were like important parts of my childhood that were very, very positive. And when you're a kid, you just take so much for granted. And as an adult now and as a grandmother, I was reminded at how slowly Mr. Rogers spoke. I was reminded that his focus with every single program he did was to pretend as if he was only talking to one child. He never thought about the thousands and thousands who were watching him through television, and how he always tried to give that reassurance that boosted their self-esteem and that said things like, you know, adults care for you and we're going to try to keep you as safe as we possibly can. He didn't say you'd always be safe. He said, we're going to do our best to keep you as safe as we possibly can. And so I think there were a lot of reminders there of what kids really need. You know, he allowed time. He said there needs to be time for play, unstructured time for kids to be creative and use their imagination and play in the dirt and play with toys. We've gotten so far away from that. So it was maybe not anything new learned, but some really good reminders.
I find it ironic, then, what you just described, quoting Mr. Rogers, paraphrasing Mr. Rogers about adults doing the best they can, that, tell me if this is accurate, that most of the children who were harmed through abuse or neglect were harmed by people, adults, who are there to protect them.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
That is accurate. The majority of children are not harmed by strangers. It is most a mom first, second usually a dad. So people who were supposed to protect and care for them the most.
Mm. I'm going to move on to something else in just a moment. You mentioned online, and this is I don't know if you could say a relatively new danger since the internet has been around for maybe 25, 30 years, but something that we're paying more attention to today. We're going to talk about that in just one moment. But this question I have to ask you every single time that we talk, and I know that those listening are wondering the same thing. When and how do they report suspected child abuse?
So anyone can report suspected child abuse. Community members can do so anonymously. They do not have to give their name or contact information. Mandated reporters, the professionals or volunteers who work with kids, bus drivers, teachers, doctors, dentists, nurses, athletic coaches, those folks are required by law. And you don't have to be certain. You have to have a reasonable suspicion, that thing in your gut that says this child is not safe. And so what you do then is you pick up the phone and you dial Childline, which is the central registry. It's the hotline for reporting abuse. And that number is 1-800-932-0313.
And we will give that number again throughout the program. But, you know, you said that something you suspect in your gut. I don't know. There are certain people that have better judgment than others, but still, your gut usually is a good barometer for if there's something going on.
It absolutely is. And I think most times in our life, we point more to the times we didn't follow it and say, I wish I had. Your gut's usually pretty tried and true. And here's the thing you have to remember. The child protection system is reactionary, which means somebody needs to ring the bell and send up the alert to check on a child. And so what's the worst case? You make the report, you make the call, and a child gets checked on to learn that maybe everything is really okay. That's really not a bad outcome now, is it? Mm-hmm. So it's always better to be safe than sorry.
As we said in the introduction, and this was taken right from your website, I have to admit, is that harm can take many forms. We've been talking about physical abuse and neglect. But one in particular that is getting more attention is when kids are online, especially on social media, either with their phones, their tablets, their computers. So this is kind of a basic question I think everyone probably knows the answer to, but just get your take on it. How can this be dangerous?
Oh, in so many forms. This is the first generation we have of kids who are moving seamlessly between the digital world and the physical world, and they do it without thinking. It's just seamless, back and forth thousands of times a day sometimes. So children, first of all, they're exposed to things that maybe is not age appropriate for them, and things that most certainly would go against maybe the family values of having your kids exposed to. Sadly, we've heard statistics and data and the stories just in the last year or so in central Pennsylvania here, some of the human and sex trafficking in Cumberland County that District Attorney McCormick was very much involved with. You know, there's ways and access to kids through the digital world. And sometimes it can be a positive thing, but very often not. There's all kinds of research about how it's impacting children's mental health. There's bullying that happens through there that's harder and harder to monitor. There's a plethora of ways that it's very damaging to our children.
You know, I was thinking about this, that there probably is not a day that goes by that you don't hear about a case of someone being arrested, at least being arrested, of an adult that has reached out online to a juvenile, usually for sex, mm-hmm. and will travel to that area. I mean, travel from other countries for sex with a juvenile. I mean, it's so frightening for parents, but how can you keep kids safe from that?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a natural tendency to look at restriction, right? So all throughout the country, there's legislation at varying degrees of the stages of process, trying to restrict by age access to different platforms, trying to hold the different platforms accountable for their messaging to kids. TikTok, we've seen that time and time again with some of the TikTok challenges and things like that. And so there's a tendency to restrict. One of the things that Pennsylvania Family Support Alliance really believes in is trying to look at a family digital wellness plan.
That's an initiative that you're doing,
it
right?
It is. Okay. It is. And that's simply looking at things from more of a health lens. So let me give you an example. We know that we have laws that restrict age by which you can purchase and consume alcohol. We know that we have age limits by which you can purchase tobacco. And we know that we grew up, I think towards the end of our growing up years, was the whole messaging of just say no, which was the campaign against drugs. Now, what do we know most kids do? Most kids try alcohol under age 21. Most kids try smoking under age 18. And sadly, a fair number of kids try drugs. So we have to, as parents, as folks raising children, sometimes it's grandparents, it's kinship providers, we have to build into our family culture strong assessments about what each kid needs based on their age development around social media and the digital world. Our own kind of family norms and rules. How many times you go out to a restaurant and if there's a mom, a dad, and the two kids, you see all four of them sitting there with their smartphones. They're not even talking to each other.
I've been there before.
Been there, done yep. that. And that comes from parents modeling the behavior and allowing it. So your family digital plan might be, we have strong parental controls for these kids. We have time limits by when they can be on their iPad, and maybe it's only on the weekends or very limited through the week. We have a rule that we don't, none of us take to the table when we're going to share a meal, our phones. And then there's discussion about the whys. And you talk about how, oh, we like so much to hear about your day. Tell us one thing you learned today, or what was your favorite part of the day? And you begin to talk to kids, too, about, at a young age, about who they may encounter online. Not if, but who they may, and what the response might be. What is a good response? And then you reinforce that. And what you reinforce with, and this is some good old Fred Rogers talk here, there isn't anything you can't talk to me about. I'm always going to love you no matter what. You're wonderful just the way you are. Mom or mom and dad or just dad want to keep you as safe as we possibly can. So it's a different day. And, you know, we don't have a choice. I mean, we could stick our heads in the sand. I don't think that's going to be the answer to it. But I have a feeling that our legislators, at some point, they'll work it out. You know, Representative Monroe's been working on this with House Bill 2017 that, believe it or not, has some high school kids helping him craft the legislation because they felt so strongly about it. At some point, we'll work out some legislation in Pennsylvania that'll get through on restrictions. But the messaging has to be to parents. You know, you had to teach your kids how to cross the street. This is no different. We have to teach them, and we have to look at it from a health lens, because just saying no and just restricting is not going to be the answer that keeps them safe.
That legislation you talked about, there are at least two bills in Harrisburg. Are they both geared toward TikTok?
They actually go, they are not specific just to TikTok. The one is, the one isn't. But they're really looking at social media companies and their ability to monitor chats, to make sure that they're doing some monitoring with safety things on that, strengthening the proof of age verification, and then prohibiting some of the data mining for users under age 18, which is really very scary when you look at some of that, how they can be tracked and traced. And then some, like Senator Hughes's legislation, looked at actually consent from a parent or legal guardian for anyone under age 16. And some of this gets really hard. My goodness, we let kids drive cars at 16.
Right.
So now we want to say,
or go to war at 18. Yeah.
And we're not going to let you sign on to this platform. So they're tough things. You know, there's a lot of gray in some of this. But the one thing that I do think is certain is that everybody's concerned about it and should be.
Well, let's talk about that, because the TikTok bills on the federal level have been aimed at mostly national security because of TikTok's affiliation with in China. The state level, more protection for the TikTok users. I've heard some pushback, though, from some organizations that are saying, okay, well, you're talking about restricting freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I say, what's the alternative? I mean, I get the whole restriction of and freedom of speech, but when it's your child, when it's your grandchild, what are you going to vote for? What are you going to most want? Because you don't get a redo on some of this stuff.
Yeah, I want to switch. We only have a couple minutes left. I want to switch to talk a little bit about mandated reporting. Pennsylvania Family Support Alliance is a training organization. You train mandated reporters. What goes into that?
Oh, a whole lot. How's that?
I would imagine, yeah.
A whole lot. We have, we developed one of the first training programs throughout the state on recognizing and reporting child abuse, 25 plus years ago. We train thousands and thousands of folks. We use trainers who are experts, absolute experts in the law and keeping kids safe. The thing we want people to know is that none of this comes naturally. It really doesn't. So you have to get education. You have to learn what the signs and symptoms are and the various forms of child abuse. And then you have to know the proper way of reporting abuse, because there is a proper way. And how to work with kids around these reports.
Are there lessons that non-mandated reporters can learn?
I think the biggest lesson is to follow your gut and always believe children if they disclose abuse. And so follow through and do so by contacting Childline at 1-800-932-0313.
We have about a minute left. I want to thank you very much for being with us today. Training for parents. I mean, this is one of these things that people just assume, oh, everyone, billions of people have done it. I can do it. Not everyone feels as confident, though.
No, I laugh when, you know, we spend time with Secretary Arkush from Department of Human Services and, you know, physician, right? She was, you know, held professor. She's had many, many very prestigious positions in her career. And her story that I'm always kind of fond of is when she says she had a set of twins and she still to this day cannot believe they allowed her to leave the hospital with both babies. So there's a whole lot to learn, and most of us never stop, and it goes on. And, you know, I think the most we can hope for is that we have some caring folks along the way that help us.
Yeah. Angela Little is the president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Family Support Alliance. Thank you very much for being here today and for all the work that you do.